A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why UnitedHealthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Dad and I are still on a high after meeting so many wonderful people in Bendigo and Adelaide during our live shows. And Brisbane, guess what? You folks are next. So we'll be heading to the Paddo Tavern in Paddington on the 11th of February. So head to standup.com.au and search Loose Units Live, or head to the Loose Units event page on Facebook. Enjoy the episode. When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. My dad was a cop in the 1980s in Sydney, which has widely been described as an absolute shitstorm. Now, you all know this. Presumably, you've read the book Loose Units, and you've listened to Loose Units the podcast, and season 2 of Loose Units the podcast, Electric Blue. But guess what? Dad was also in the Work Cover Authority, which meant he was involved investigating some of the most horrific industrial accidents and cover-ups imaginable. So for this very special mini-series, we are doing Work Cover Authority cases with Dad in Loose Units Not Safe for Work. Hello and welcome to Loose Units Not Safe for Work. This is a mini series where we are going to explore Dad's time in Work Cover Authority, which I guess is kind of a strange area of investigation. But if you're a fan of Loose Units, you will recall a case, and Dad, you know this case very well. It's the one where there was the poor kid who was trapped in the machine
that makes. Are we allowed to say what the machine made?
I don't know if we can.
Rice bubbles.
There we go. And we'll be hearing from someone's lawyers.
We haven't said which company made the rice bubbles.
So, obviously, that was clearly a taste of what it was like to work in industrial accidents. Dad, could you just highlight for people what Work Cover is?
Okay, well, Work Cover, it used to be called the Department of Industrial Relations and Employment.
And why should people be? Because that sounds extremely dry. Why would people be interested in hearing about this?
Well, if I had have said it was about the Department of Industrial Relations and Employment, you'd probably just, you know, whatever.
Could you think of a more exciting name for it?
You mean make up a name?
Yeah, just come up with a name for this, like, group that you were working for.
Well, the department that investigated all horrendous things that you can never imagine to do with any on-site accident, workplace accident, and also anything to do with unions at the big end of town. Okay. It was absolutely... Mark my words, you're going to hear some shit.
So how about the Department of Horrendous Accidental Mysteries?
Yeah, but except that they generally weren't. I mean, it was my job to go in and unravel the mystery.
So it was effectively detective work, but it was...
Oh, very much so.
Very gruesome, right.
Yeah.
So you left the police...
Can I just tell you that after I'd left the police force, I mean, I was thinking about leaving the police force for probably maybe a year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a big thing to leave because emotionally it has its hooks sort of dug right into every part of your body because it's a sort of an institution where it's so intense.
Mm.
It's a love-hate relationship. It's like people when they come back from war, they miss it. No matter how terrible it is, it becomes this part of your... You chase that fix of adrenaline.
Did you get flashbacks or any of those other things?
No, not really, but I remember flicking through when I started to realise that my days were numbered in the New South Wales Police Force because I was just sick of, God. I was thinking about this yesterday. I was in Auckland recently and this statistic that I'm about to tell you is fairly scary, and that is that the year that I left the New South Wales Police Force, they were losing about 150 police a month.
Holy shit.
For pulling the pin.
And is that because of what? Why?
For the same reasons that there was just such disillusionment. Right. They had a real problem. They were losing really, really highly skilled police.
Mm.
You know, that the core of the police force. And I think from sort of an experience perspective that the police force really suffered. I'm not going to say a brain drain. That sounds a bit, you know, ostentatious, but you know, they lost a lot of incredible talent, and that was good for other industries in sort of allied industries like security. And I know a lot of police that went on to do incredible things in the private sector, and might I add, earn a lot of money. And a lot of police that I worked with set up you know, sort of risk management companies and things like that.
So what was it that drew you not to the corporate sector but to WorkCover?
Well, I've always liked the sort of the government agency.
Right.
I guess it's the security. You know, we had a young family.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents at the time thought it was grossly irresponsible for me to pull the pin on the police force, even though the weird thing is that everyone was against it in the beginning. But then they come round and think, oh, yeah, you know, it's not such a bad thing. And then when I sort of told everyone that I was going to leave. So I started going through the government gazettes and I saw this ad one day. Now, you know that I worked in engineering for 5 years prior to joining the New South Wales Police Force.
Now, is this the toolmaking stuff?
Toolmaking, safes, you know, all that sort of stuff. Heavy industry, engineering, had a very good sense of that type of industry. And then one day I, in the New South Wales Gazette, they used to have these sort of gazette newspapers.
Right.
And there was a job for a safety inspector with the Department of Industrial Relations and Employment. And it was just, it was in that crossover period where it was going to become the New South Wales WorkCover Authority.
Mm.
Get ready for this. The description in a nutshell was, must have an engineering background with strong investigative skills.
And you just spent, you know, how many years in the police force? In the New South Wales Police
probably
force?
Close to 8 years.
Okay, great. And you'd obviously done, as listeners will know, you'd done general duties, forensics, air wing, you know, fingerprints, all kinds of stuff.
Mm.
So, I mean, do you remember the interview?
I do. I can remember it so clearly. I can actually remember the makeup of the panel. And I can picture the three people.
Oh, it was like an audition in like
panel of three. They had a female.
Oh, it's like Footloose. You have to dance for them.
There was no dancing.
Oh, all right.
I was very nervous, but I knew I had an incredible CV, and I just knew that that if I put my best foot forward, I had a good chance.
I have a question, Dad. Now, I've been told by people, including yourself, that you should never look for a job unless you're still employed at the previous job. Like, you shouldn't quit and then just be out in the middle of nowhere, right? So, did you quit and then start looking, or were you looking before you left the police force?
I was looking, but I actually resigned. I was so... Oh, God, I don't want to sound like a total tosser, but
no, it's fine.
I was actually very confident.
That you'd get something else?
That I'd get this particular gig.
Really?
So I pulled the pin and...
How did that go, by the way? I mean, obviously...
No, it was terrible. I did what was called an exit interview. I was interviewed by this really, really lovely sergeant, and he was devastated. He just thought... He sort of sussed me out and thought I was pretty genuine. He looked at my service record in the police force.
Mm.
And he said, look, John, I know there's nothing I can do to change your mind, but he wanted me to fill out this very, very intense questionnaire about why I was leaving the New South Wales Police Force. If I had have known what I now know, in that I was never going to go back to the police force, I would have answered the questionnaire honestly.
Yeah.
But I lied and made out that the police force was the best job in the world.
You didn't want to burn any bridges.
Precisely. Sure. I thought, you know, you just never know. Mm. I may want to come back. So I made it all very nice and sort of frothy, but I did the police force a big disservice, because what the police force, in doing these exit interviews, of which they were doing about, let me think about this, maybe about between 1,200 and 1,500 a year, that's a massive rate. They really, if all the police that were leaving had been honest, they then could have used that in a genuine way to fix up some of the terrible problems.
Yeah.
The morale was low, but anyway, look, the listeners are here today to hear what happened with me in the WorkCover Authority. I did the big interview, and at the very, very end, there was a gentleman in the middle of this panel, and his name was Paul McLaughlin. He was the director of the department and a lovely, lovely guy. And at the very end of the interview, the last question to me was, is there anything you'd like to say in closing that you feel might enhance your possibilities of getting this particular job?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always wanted to say what I'm about to say, and I said, well, actually, there's one thing. Yes, I come from good stock, which is an expression. I didn't really know what it meant, but it's been one of those phrases used in the family.
Yeah.
It just sounded great, but what it really means is that you don't have any convict blood in your family. Did you know that?
Why would that be important?
It's not important at all, but...
So why would you say it?
Because I didn't know what it meant at the time.
So you said a thing that sounded cool, and then you realize actually it made you sound like old money. Which you're not. I mean,
no. The thing is that people say it when they don't think they have any convict blood in your family. It used to be, a long time ago, a bad thing. Of course, now it's really cool and exciting and wonderful and something to brag about. So what I was actually saying to them, in essence, was something I didn't really know what I was. What, I didn't understand the connotation. But as it turns out, as I found out later, many years later, is that we actually do have convict blood.
Right. Do we?
In our family, yeah.
How much are we talking here?
First Fleet stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So really exciting stuff. But that's...
That just sounds like you ended a very good interview with like some cryptic bullshit, like the eagle flies at midnight, wink, and they're like, does it?
Yeah. Well, some do. But anyway, look, I got the gig.
Now, how did Mum feel about this? Listeners are now well acquainted with, you know, Mum, and she was obviously out of the force at this point. Was she pissed? Was she okay with it?
She was. I think really, really she wanted me to leave the police force. Okay. Shift work. I was sick to death of shift work.
How did your friends take you leaving the force, by the way? You know, your buddies and your sergeants and...
You know, it was really... Oh God, look, it was emotionally... Actually, what I may not have told you, Paul, is that for many, many years, I was... You know, I used to get a bit sad every time I saw a police car.
Really?
Yeah, and if I heard a siren.
You never told me that.
No.
That's amazing.
It just came back to me then.
Just think about this, though. Listeners and readers of Loose Units have read and listened to, you know, hundreds of hours of your adventures and of our interactions. So, you leaving the force, if I'm dwelling on it a little bit, I think it's because they might want to know what could possibly push you out of that career. Was it any one specific incident, or was it just like a general climate of just needing to get away from this traumatic job?
Well, there was that major case. Look, a lot of my colleagues were being
arrested
and charged with, you know, high level corruption.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are a couple of stories. Oh, look, we're moving on from the police, but I'll just say this to you, that for anyone that comes to the live shows, I can promise you there'll be a few more police stories that you've never heard.
Yeah, we're not done with the police stuff yet. No, we just wanted to keep it, you know, partitioned.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, you know, there's stuff that we do save for the live shows, because I think that's really important for the people that come along to have some extra really...
Yeah.
And I've still got, you know, stuff in the back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. And the live shows have been a real treat, just watching people react in real time. Mm. But one of the things I like about this is that we get to delve very, very deep. From like a narrative perspective, I find it very interesting that there are things you clearly liked about the police force and that you almost needed.
I suffered terrible withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah.
Like, I used to absolutely... I actually regretted for some time...
Leaving.
But look, for any listeners out there that are feeling at this point, well, you know, we've been for the ride with the police force. You know, if you've got any doubts or trepidation or fear or worry about... Is the work cover going to be as exciting? I can guarantee you all here and now, I'll give you an ironclad guarantee that you're going to hear some really fucked up shit. Like, we're talking A-grade, major, bad shit.
Okay.
I had no idea what I was... Again, it's like reliving the... When I joined the New South Wales Police Force, I went out to the academy, and on that fateful day, I thought, what the fuck have I got myself in for? And that's exactly what I thought when I joined the Work Cover Authority.
Okay, so you've got the job, right? Mm. Congratulations. The dance went really well. You've got the job. You're in Juilliard. What's your first day like in the Work Cover Authority?
I was working in the city. I was assigned a buddy.
Oh, so like in the police force?
Same as the police force.
Really? And were any of these buddies that you worked with from a police background?
This particular guy, I won't use his name, but he was such a... lovely, lovely guy. He really took me under his wing. And he actually, in his private life, he did some really, really interesting things. He was actually a mentor for two very, very famous boxers in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, and he actually had a finger missing.
Oh.
That had happened, get ready for this,
yeah,
as a result of an industrial accident.
Oh, cool. That's like his Batman origin story. Like,
isn't that interesting?
He gets industrial accidented and wants to go and fight.
Here's a little fun fact, Paul, because I know that people, I assume that some of them do actually do like my little fun facts, but ready for this?
Yeah.
And I'm looking right into your eyes when I say this to you. He used to shave his nose every day. Tell me that is not so surreal.
Oh.
I think that's quite fascinating. It's like, you know that there used to be a myth about shaving stimulates hair growth?
Yes. Does it?
I don't know, but he used to shave his nose, but I think what he actually created was a sort of a...
Beard.
A hairy nose syndrome.
Well, yeah.
And then he had to maintain... Yeah, anyway.
It's like...
That's an aside. So
no.
He was missing a finger and he shaved his nose.
It's like rhinoplastic topiary. That's
but he was a really, really lovely guy. And he had a very... he was very professional, but had a fairly laissez-faire... she'll be right attitude. And he was always very kind. And our job, in essence, we would get these accidents that would come in, and they ranged from, I mean, our stock and trade, and I don't want to sound callous here, were amputations.
Okay.
That was like pretty well every day we'd have a few amputations, generally fingers.
Can you talk me through an amputation? Because I know in the book there is a case involving, when you put pressure on someone, they get cut in half, and it's that shock. What's it called?
It could be called toxic shock syndrome.
Toxic shock syndrome.
And it happens to shunters on railway yards when two trains come together.
Mm, so what I'm asking is, can you get that with something as small as a finger?
No.
Okay. So it's got to be like really big. But when you say amputation, I'm picturing something fairly clean. Now, I guess that depends on the machinery, but could you talk listeners through?
Okay. All right. Some of the machines that we used to go, we'd go into these very large factories generally.
Yeah.
And they'd have these, you can imagine anything to do with paper, and you have guillotines.
Oh, yes.
So you have these massive guillotines, and they can cut, I'm just trying to think of the equivalent in sort of millimeters. Let's say we're talking, they could cut maybe 25, 30 centimeters, a stack of paper.
Yeah.
And the guillotine would come down, but it doesn't come down straight. It's the top blade is at an angle, so it creates that cutting effect. And these workers would line up the paper or whatever had to be cut, and they'd be obviously pressing with their two hands, with sort of eight fingers. You're looking at my hands here, Paul. You can see that the thumbs are set back, and the four fingers on either side are leaning towards the blade.
Yeah.
And they would position the paper. Now then, to activate the guillotine, you had a foot-operated pedal. But the problem was, here's a classic. So I'm just going to give sort of lots and lots of stories about the accidents that I went to and the ramifications. Now, they'll sort of start off with, amputations, which, in the grand scheme of things, are quite serious, but they're not life-threatening.
Okay.
But, I mean, let's face it, if you lose eight fingers, you're pretty fucked.
Yep.
Now, one of the first accidents I ever went to in a factory was where a secretary from the main office was walking past, and she inadvertently tapped the switch on the floor.
And someone had their hands in?
And the guy had his two hands in, and he's looking at her, checking her out. And as he's looking at her, she's accidentally touched the pedal, and down came the guillotine. And chopped eight fingers off, and they fell behind the machine.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And, so I went to numerous accidents like that. If they were very, very unfortunate, they'd lose two hands, depending on how far in. And there were these other weird machines that bend stainless steel. You know, when you go into any sort of shop or factory or wherever you go and you see fabricated stainless steel,
yeah,
and it's got amazing bends, that's all bent on these amazing machines. Now, they're really, really, they can be very dangerous.
Mm.
So, yeah, amputations was...
So that was the thing, that was your stock and trade, like you said. But on your first day, first of all, when we picture police officers, we know what the uniforms look like. You and your buddy, who you've chosen not to name, what are you wearing when you're out on the job? Just plain clothes or...?
Plain clothes, tie. You know, we dressed very, very nicely.
Yeah.
We had a lot of power. We had the power to go into any place of work and shut it down.
Really?
You could completely... You could actually... Technically, you could go to, when Australia used to manufacture cars, you could go out to an assembly line and you could actually stop the assembly line by issuing a prohibition order and the entire factory would shut down if it was a major problem with safety.
But this is stuff you got to, you know, as the job unfolded. But what was your first, how do you approach your first case? Because, I mean, obviously, you had the police academy to school you in all the basics of police work. But at this point, it seems like it's just you and a guy learning the ropes. Like, what was it like actually doing the job for the first time?
Well, it was really, it was just sort of watch and learn, and because there was a lot of legislation that you had to sort of grasp.
Right.
And you had to get these special powers that had to go through. They were an act of parliament in New South Wales. They had to be gazetted, and you had to wait for the gazetting. So it had to go through the parliamentary process to get your powers, which gave you, you know, in law, the extreme powers to go in and actually, make recommendations.
Do you mean like it's like getting a warrant made up or?
Yeah, kind of. And it gave you unfettered power.
Right.
So, look, I'll just give you a few. We were also responsible for all forklift examinations, overhead traveling crane, explosive power tools, all the types of machinery. Dangerous stuff, you know, the big cranes, the tower cranes, all those guys and women as well, but back then definitely more so men, had to be certified. And there was a whole group within our department, I found out, that were actually going out and passing some of the big crane operators that weren't competent, but they were taking massive backhanders in the thousands of dollars. Because these big crane operators, they were earning... serious money. And you know those big mobile cranes you see? Occasionally, and it's on the news, they tip over and create, you know, major dramas.
Do you remember your first case, so to speak?
Well, we went into a factory in the inner city of Sydney to do a forklift examination. And as we were approaching this factory, it was a carpet factory, and carpet factories with the forklifts have got these incredibly long, like lances.
Oh, yes.
Jousting lances.
Yeah.
Have you seen them?
Yeah. The on forklifts.
Yeah.
Yeah. They go into pallets.
Oh,
right?
No, that's the ones that go into pallets. But these are sort of like 20 foot long, like a pole.
Oh, shit.
Just at one, and they go into the middle
of
the
roll.
Rug roll.
Yeah.
And then they pick them up. Oh. You know, we've sort of come in and we're just standing in this huge internal factory, and it was so surreal. We saw two guys each on a forklift, and they were actually reenacting medieval jousting with their forklifts. They were actually charging at each other, and to see who'd be the and one person obviously would at the last second pull away.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can imagine you'd have these incredibly, and they're quite sharp. These massive sort of rods, you can imagine
you'd impale the other person.
Impale.
So this happened, hang on.
And we're watching them.
That's not why you were called in, right?
No, we were there to do a forklift exam. One of the guys that we were going to examine was one of the guys unlicensed, jousting.
Oh my God.
With another guy.
I know. Oh my God.
And it was incredible. And I'll tell you what, it was fascinating. My buddy, he found it quite amusing. I mean, in a weird way, and in a sort of a voyeuristic way. And we're watching this medieval twentieth century jousting with forklifts. I mean, you had to see it to believe it. And they're actually almost sword fighting each other.
Oh my God!
It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then we walked over, and someone said, "Oi, what are you guys doing here?" Blah blah blah. And we said, "Oh, we're here to do the forklift exam." But guess what? You're never going to get a forklift license because you're a dickhead.
Right.
And the other guy, we took his license off him. So then the poor company
yep.
had no qualified forklift drivers.
Oh, shit.
So that was a bit awkward for them.
And two unemployed jousters.
Mm.
So when you walk into, I'm not going to say crime scene, that's obviously the low end of the inspection.
Well, some of them are crime scenes.
Well, yes, but not this one, I'm saying. When you walk in your, you know, in your clothes, do you have a badge that you flash?
No, you've got a little card. No badges. I mean, it wasn't like that. But by golly, we had some serious powers.
All right. So what was your first actual case?
My first case where I actually went out on my own to do an investigation.
Yeah.
It was at a company in DY, which is on the northern beaches of Sydney.
How would you describe DY to someone who's not been there before?
Well, I want to be careful what I say because my parents live there. Mm-hmm. So we'll leave it at that. But there's an industrial area.
Yes,
sort of out the back of DY. Funnily enough, where you went to school. And anyway, this particular, I'll paint the picture of the incident. It was a fatality.
Mm.
So it was a process worker. A process worker is a worker that's sort of semi-skilled. And this particular factory made the rubber backing for carpet. You know, that at the back of carpet to bind all the hair together. They've got various chemicals and they're very, very strong.
Yeah.
And there was a two-story high kettle. We'll call it a kettle, like a stainless steel cylinder. And you'd climb up this ladder onto this viewing platform.
Yeah.
And then, like in a submarine, you'd have the big round sort of wheel.
Yeah.
And you'd turn it and turn it. And then once it was had sort of turned in sort of fully in one direction, you could then open up this huge, like a door.
Mm.
And this particular door had a thick glass porthole in the middle, so that the people that were mixing up this compound could actually see how it was progressing, because it was all based on time.
So the kettle is actually boiling up the liquid. Rubber.
Yes, but what happens is this particular process worker was given an incredibly complex and intricate sort of recipe.
Yeah.
And it was the order of operation was incredibly precise. And there may have been from memory, there were about 20 different chemicals that he had to add. He was sort of creating this amazing substance that was hot and rubbery.
How is he adding them, by the way?
Well, they were all in powder form.
Right, so wait, he's making cup of soup. So
he's doing this huge, he's like making if you can imagine, an incredibly big cake.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, but it's sort of slightly molten.
And is he on the top? So he's opened this big hatch thing,
and
right?
He had to add another couple of
sachets,
another couple of kilos of different powders.
Yeah.
And one thing I do remember is that all these powders were the same color, but he was very, very, precise. He's this poor guy. He's doing exactly and perfectly what he was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So he's got this hatch open, and he goes to add one of the chemicals, and it exploded, and molten rubber blew out of this machine, engulfed him in rubber. So A, it's burning him.
Yeah.
Slight also problem, can't breathe because it covers him completely.
Yeah.
So he can't, his mouth, his nose has no, it's not exposed to the air anymore. He's encased like Gumby.
Oh my God.
And he passed away. Now, I come in. Now, obviously, in this particular case, the problem, we didn't know this at the time, but why had there been an explosion?
Right.
Now, the chemical engineers that had come up with the most, all the processes, I was given the order of operation. And then I, with all my sort of, skills and dogged determination to find out, because there has to be a reason there's an explosion.
Yeah.
And then through a process of elimination, and this is one of the cases that I did where I was really, really basically working on my own using a lot of, common sense, but also I've always had a very strong love of science.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Because I was very, very, actually that was probably my favorite
subject
at school.
Yeah.
Because I used to make, little explosives and I used to, actually I'm not proud of myself, but I once made a small bomb and put it on the back of a... No, maybe we won't talk about that.
Wait, I believe you just did.
Okay. No, it was like a fire thing.
Oh, you know? Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so what I did, I actually discovered that there was a mistake. in the order of operation. They'd mixed steps 17 and 18, should have been 18, 17, and they'd flipped it round.
Right.
But I had to do a lot of research to find out what would happen if, because it was completely harmless if it was done in a certain order, but if you flipped one procedure around, you created an explosive situation. And I got to the bottom of it. And the chemical engineers and the industrial chemists, they were adamant that they hadn't done anything wrong. But the reality is that they'd actually made a mistake.
That got a guy killed.
And it got him killed.
So when you find that out, I mean, what do you do next?
Well, we prepare a report for the chief industrial magistrate, and it goes to court.
Yeah.
And the courts have incredible power in with factories and big industry, and they can, you know, make changes and make recommendations.
You don't arrest anyone, though, no?
No, you don't, no. But you do go to court, and they do have very hefty fines.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Okay. So.
I also had to do a particularly. We also dealt with a lot of electrocutions.
Really?
Which were really, really full on. So, quite often in the city, in most cities, when you have an empty, like one tenant vacates a particular office floor, then the new tenant comes in and they bring in all their own trades and they refit it.
Yeah.
And what had happened was that the people before had actually run this particular electrical wire through one of the central columns, and they'd connected it to the water pipes, but no one knew. So what happened was this new plumber comes in, he turns off all the power, but he didn't know that the power had been sort of somewhat dodgily run through one of the columns. So he's up in the roof hooking up various things, and he was electrocuted, and he actually died up inside the roof, which was fairly traumatic. And when he was being electrocuted, his head was spasming, and what was happening, they heard this banging up in the ceiling, and it sounded like this incredible drum. And then they ran in, and they were, because these office floors are huge, and they found this guy up there still vibrating.
Oh my God.
And trapped, and he was literally holding on to all these copper pipes full of water, which are incredible conductors of electricity.
Oh.
And then they didn't know how to turn it off, because all the fundamental things that you'd normally expect with wiring had all those rules been broken. Now, it was our job to go in and then do a reversal and find out exactly. And these can be really, really full-on examinations. Very, very thorough. Lots of paperwork, lots of trying to get around and figure out how this happened. Because unfortunately, in the world of accidents, it's quite often an accident that highlights a problem. So there are all these problems out there, but if...
You don't spot them until they actually hurt
someone. That's right. So, yeah, we often were the last people.
Oh,
so that was pretty intense.
Okay. Well, I mean, speaking of intense, that was an intense episode of Loose Units Not Safe for Work. Thank you so much for listening. Part 2 comes out next week. Now, listen, everyone, it's getting very, very close to Christmas. So if you're hoping to get a copy of Loose Units for a loved one, and you really should, or yourself, the book depository is probably your best bet. Loose Units is stocked there, and it will be dispatched in 3 business days. Plus, there's free delivery worldwide, so get your copy now. Or if you're not too fussed about the Christmas deadline and you just want to read a copy of Loose Units, here's what we want you to do. Go to your local bookstore and make them order it in. Let's just blanket Australia with requests to your bookstores for copies of Loose Units. Let's just flood bookstores with this book, because book 2 is being written as we speak. I am currently writing book 2 of Loose Units. Anyway, that's all the time we have for this episode of Loose Units. Not Safe for Work. We'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itsinas.
Kayla Itsinas. I'm Kayla Itsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.